Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is David Rothkopf, who's the CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy magazine. He's also president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and Superclass, The Global Elite and the World They Are Making. His latest book is Power Incorporated, The Epic Rivalry Between Big Business and Government and the Reckoning That Lies Ahead. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Rothkopf.
It's good to be back.
And today, the president in the Rose Garden made some fairly monumental announcements that are bound to irritate the Republican chair of the House committee that is trying to investigate the White House at every turn, Darrell Issa, in as much as the president has appointed Susan Rice to be the next National Security Advisor when Tom Donilon steps down soon. So, and of course, Samantha Power is going to take Susan Rice's position at the United Nations. What's your response to this, particularly in the context of this trench warfare that's going on between the Republicans, McCain and Issa, in terms of blaming Susan Rice for this trumped-up Benghazi story?
Look, I think the president's handling of this was a sign of confidence, and I think it was also rising above the din of this Washington food fight that's going on. You know, if anybody's irritated by it, it's people who have made the issue into an irritant themselves. Nobody since Benghazi has asserted at any point or demonstrated in any way that Susan Rice did anything other than what any public official would do, which is take the talking points they were given and present them via the media outlets she was asked to present them on. If there was mishandling of, you know, security in Benghazi, she had nothing to do with that. If there was mishandling of, or the framing of the talking points, she also didn't have anything to do with that. So, I think it's an issue only to those who wish to make it an issue, but, you know, Washington being what it was, the president knew that some of these people are going to go and howl, and I think he said, go ahead, howl. I'm going to pick the best people. I'm going to pick the team that I'm comfortable with. And I just can't, you know, let U.S. national security be held hostage to petty politics.
Well, it would seem, though, that Susan Rice is just a surrogate for their relentless attack on the president himself. And she is quite close to the president, is she not?
Susan Rice is kind of the original passenger on the Obama national security train, right? She was the first person that he had on his national security team. She was the person he asked to put together the national security team during the campaign. She was the person who oversaw the national security transition between the campaign and going into office. She has always been close to him. She is close to the people who are close to him. He has faith in her. And I think, frankly, given the Benghazi thing, one of the things that he's doing is he's sending a loud and clear message, which is, you can take shots at her, but she is my woman for this job, and I am going to stand by her. And I am committed and loyal to the people who are close to me. That's going to give her a lot of advantages in dealing with people around the world, because they're going to say, I know this woman has the full confidence of the president.
So how has David Rothkopf, since you've written about the National Security Council in Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power, has the president been on a kind of learning curve here in terms of his National Security Council? It seemed like the initial choice of a Marine general was a bit of a misstep.
I think early on the president was trying to put together a team. Sometimes when you put together a team, there's chemistry. Sometimes there's not chemistry. I think General Jones didn't fit in the team, but he made perfect sense as a choice, as a one of the most distinguished military leaders of his time. And it wasn't a fiasco; it just didn't work out. Tom Donilon, who had been Jones's deputy, stepped in. They put together a good, solid national security process. Donilon did an excellent job in maintaining the process, but also the confidence of other people in the cabinet that he would be an honest broker. And on some issues like China, issues, relations with the Gulf, relations with Israel, relations with Russia, he played an active role traveling the world and doing important missions. I think they've got the NSC working pretty well, and I think one of the challenges for Rice is going to be to keep it working well.
Again, I'm speaking with David Rothkopf, who is CEO and editor-at-large at Foreign Policy Magazine. He's also the president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and Superclass, the Global Elite and the World They Are Making. His latest book is Power, Inc., The Epic Rivalry Between Big Business and Government and the Reckoning That Lies Ahead. So with Susan Rice's appointment, I guess, and its promotion in the sense that the National Security Advisor is an extremely important post, somebody that spends an awful lot of time up close and personal with the president, and then Samantha Power assuming Susan Rice's position as a U.S. ambassador to the U.N., you have two women in high places in this administration, both of whom in many ways have their political genesis, if you will, in a recognition of human rights and the importance of combating genocide. Apparently, when Susan Rice was in the Clinton White House, she's still haunted in many ways by what happened in Rwanda and the failure to intervene and prevent that genocide. And both she and Samantha Power apparently weighed in on the president, along with Hillary Clinton, to get involved in Libya. So how is this going to translate then in terms of the U.S., for example, dealing with what's happening in Syria and other places around the world where we have, well, let's look at the Congo. I mean, millions have died there and there hasn't been an intervention there. So do you think that this means more humanitarian intervention in the future?
I doubt it. I think that the United States will follow roughly the same approach that it's followed thus far, taking things on a case-by-case basis and intervening both where we have to and where we can make a difference. The difference between Libya and Syria is the issue of whether we could actually step in and get something done in a fairly contained cost way, in a fairly defined period of time that would actually materially advance our interests. I think right now it's still unclear whether that can happen in Syria. I think Susan may lean in on these issues a little bit more than Tom Donilon did. I think Samantha Power may lean in a little bit more on these issues, and I think that you're likely to get more active consideration on some of these fronts. But the United States still faces fundamental constraints, both in terms of our resources and how actively we can be involved in multiple problems, and in terms of political will of the American people to put our soldiers at risk in lots of places around the world, particularly after the debacles in Iraq and Afghanistan.
But when you, if you place a value on morality, if you will, in foreign policy and intervening on the basis of human rights, particularly in the face of genocide, how can you ignore what's happening in Syria, where you've just had this reversal of this key strategic town falling to Hezbollah and the Assads, and apparently a lot of Free Syrian Army soldiers were killed and a number of them surrendered, and one doubts their fate, frankly, given the brutality of this war.
Well, if you're asking me whether I think the United States can have or should have done more in Syria, whether we should have intervened earlier, established humanitarian corridors, discussed the establishment of no-fly zone, worked with other countries to establish that, contained the problem within Syria, I think all of those things make some sense. I think the problems in Syria have to do with the fact that among the opposition, you've got a lot of bad actors, and we're unclear who's really in the leadership. I think it's a situation where once you resolve the Assad problem, you're still left with the Shiite, Sunni, Alawite divisions within the country. And I think that Syria is going to be a volatile place for a long, long time to come. I think the United States should intervene in those places in the world where we can make a difference. I think we should avoid getting bogged down in those places where we can't. That's been the hard riddle of Syria. I do think that what worries me the most about Syria is that the problems can spill into other places like Jordan, like Lebanon, like Israel, like Iraq. And you're seeing, I think, a smart response on the administration. It's a little slower than I would have liked, and it's a little less than I would have liked. But, for example, we're sending military supplies to Jordan now. to help them contain this. I think if the conclusion is that Syria is likely to be a volatile place for the next 5 to 10 years, then our goal shouldn't be, you know, just let's try to stabilize the unstabilizable. It should be, how do we contain this so that it doesn't produce worse problems beyond the borders?
But it does seem that the Russians know what they want, and they're acting fairly resolutely, and the Iranians certainly know what they want, and they've been doubling down. And Hezbollah has clearly, essentially, put boots on the ground and may well be the reason why the tide of battle is turning. So in the face of the opposition that seems to really know what they want, it seems that the United States and Europe, their problem is that they know what they don't want, but they don't seem to know what they want. Isn't there an obvious contrast there between the determination?
Sure, because the Iranians and the Russians and Hezbollah, and let's be clear, Hezbollah and the Iranians are the same thing, want Assad to stay in power. They placed a bet on it, and they're gonna stick with their bet. They've got their guy. We don't have our guy, or we don't have our group. We're trying to sort that out actively. I think that there is an effort to do that. But again, our job is not to resolve the problems of Syria. Our job is to advance the national interests of the United States of America. And that means, you know, in that part of the world, to enhance stability, to ensure access to resources, to ensure that political problems in one place don't become political problems in places that are problems for us, and wherever possible to do what we can to ensure that the values and international laws that we're seeking to advance are advanced. Sometimes you can't do all those things. I think we have been too slow to intervene. I think we've been too slow to act. But having said that, I think it's completely understandable why we have been too slow for choices in Syria.
Well, Senator McCain doesn't seem to feel in any way restrained in offering advice here. He seems to have pretty clear ideas what should be done. And he just on the Sunday talk shows, he talked about bombing Syria's airstrips with cruise missiles, etc. How do you think he's going to work with Susan Rice? He's already...
I think he's going to try to work with Susan Rice. You know, John McCain, for all of his occasionally over-the-top statements and, you know, some short temper sometimes, has been somebody who's historically been able to work across the aisle on a lot of these issues and who takes the issues seriously. And I think, you know, some of what John McCain says are things that Susan Rice and President Obama may well be a little bit sympathetic to. Having said that, Senator McCain's a senator, and it's his job to offer up his opinion and to try to mobilize, you know, processes in the Senate in ways that support them. But it's the president's job to ultimately determine whether or not to put U.S. soldiers in harm's way. And I think those are very, very different jobs, and that's why the president's a little bit slower to act than the senator.
And in terms of Samantha Power going to the U.N., given her history of having written about genocide in the Balkans and around the world in her book, The Problem from Hell, do you think that she's going to bring something new to the UN, given that there, I mentioned, for example, the ongoing Holocaust, if you will, in the Congo, where millions have died, and the international response has been, well, not particularly useful, shall we say?
Look, I hope she does. Problem from Hell is one of the great books that I've ever read on any foreign policy subject ever. I think she nailed it, and frankly, you know, I think, you know, if you go back and read the book, Susan Rice and some of her colleagues in the Clinton administration couldn't have been too comfortable with the assessment of what happened in Rwanda that Samantha Power had offered up in the book. You know, the UN ambassador has limited ability to mobilize things. And the reason that we don't intervene and we don't have solutions in places like Congo is that it really requires a multilateral effort where multiple powers that have the ability to project force are willing to work together to do so. And it's very rare that that happens. It is a deep flaw. It is a profound human failing that we can get through the 20th century with genocides in Armenia and genocides in Hitler's Europe and genocides in Mao's China and genocides in Stalin's Russia and genocide in Congo and Cambodia and Timor, and the list goes on and on, and still not have said, this is a problem the world needs to work together to resolve. We need a kind of an interventive force that works at the UN level on behalf of multiple countries to go in and do this. We need real sanctions against governments that do this, that have teeth. We need to put people away who do these kind of things and swift enforcement of those laws. We need to treat genocide like, you know, it's a threat to all of us, because it is a threat to all of us. We haven't done it. She may raise the consciousness on this, but I think one has to look at recent history and be a little bit skeptical, even if that's depressing.
Well, David Rothkopf, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks.
Again, I've been speaking with David Rothkopf, who is CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy Magazine. He's also president and CEO of Garton Rothkopf and a visiting scholar at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power and Superclass, the Global Elite and the World They Are Making. And his latest book is Power, Inc., The Epic Rivalry Between Big Business and Government and the Reckoning That Lies Ahead. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with an important member of the Syrian opposition about the Free Syrian Army's loss of a key strategic town.